Alright. Morning. Okay. So it's Parshas Lech Lecha, which is a very fundamental Parsha. It's all about Avraham Avinu. The saying goes that Parshas Bereishis starts off good. Hashem creates the world, but then it goes pretty badly. Parshas Noach is mostly bad, but ends off good because Avraham Avinu was born. And Lech Lecha is the first happy week because we're dealing with Avraham Avinu the whole week. We're sort of living with Avraham Avinu. So, very, very fundamental and powerful parsha. So let's have a look at the beginning, the first few psukim here. Parshas Lech Lecha. I'm sure it is some ideas. So the first source. So the Yoimer Hashem el Avram. Hashem says to Avram, Lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimeilatecha u'mibeis avicha el ha'oretz asher areka. Hashem says to Avram, go. Lech lecha means go for yourself from your land, from your birthplace, from your father's house to the land that I will show you. And then he promises him, if you do this, ve'escha l'goy gadol, I'll make you into a great nation. Va'avarechecha, I will bless you. Va'gad lo shemecha, I'll make your name great. Ve'yei bracha, and you shall be a blessing. Va'avarecha mevarechecha, I'll bless those that bless you. M'kalelcha o'er, those who curse you, I will curse. Nivruchu b'cha, koil mishbecha yisa adama, and all the families of the earth shall bless themselves with you, meaning, what that means is Rashi explains that they'll bless that their children should be like you. Yelech Avram, Avram went, Kasher Dibrei Lo Hashem, as Hashem told him. Yelech Itoi Loit, Loit went with him. Avram in Chomish Shana, Meshivim Shana, Betzesim in Haran. Avram was 75 years old when he left Haran. Yikach Avram is Sarai Ishtoi, he took his wife, as Loit ben Achiv and his nephew. As Kol Rechusham Asher Achashu, all their wealth which they had amassed. And the people that they had acquired in Haran, which that means the people which they had brought to the awareness of Hashem, because they were spreading the awareness of the one God to everyone. They went, they set out for the land of Canaan, and they came to the land of Canaan. 75 years old. Kastim and went to Haran. You know, I don't know the exact timeline. He was already married at that point, I think. I think the way the Torah describes. So does it say it in the Torah how old he was? I don't remember. But he was in Haran for a while, and then Hashem told him to leave. Yes, he was born in Kastim, went to Haran, and then went to the land of Canaan. Okay, that's the psukim. Let's have a look at Rashi, and then I want to share with you something interesting on the whole thing.
It's just very interesting. It's not like there were their generations. He's going forth from his father's home. Because his father mentions that his father moved with him.
Correct. But his whole... Right, I mean, we'll see soon. There's a deeper meaning to all of this. It doesn't just mean geographically leave your father's home. But that was his father's home. That was where his family lived at that point. Right, then immigrated to Haran and settled there, and that's where he was... Yeah. It's interesting, it says right? From your birthplace. Well, but he wasn't born there, right. Here it translates it your native land. Yeah. Yeah, so there's a deeper meaning to this, and that's why I'll add some meaning to it. Okay, so Rashi says, Lech Lecha, what does it mean, go for you? It's a very interesting expression. Say Lech, go. What does Lech Lecha mean? So Rashi explains, La'na'oscha ulutoivoscha, for your benefit and for your good. Shom eschel l'goy gadol, over there I will make you into a great nation, because kan, over here, i'ato zoicha l'banim, you will not merit the children. So when you move, then you can merit the children. V'oid shohidia tivacha ba'olam, I will make your character known throughout the land. Okay. V'eschel l'goy gadol, says Rashi. What does it mean, I'll make you into a great nation? L'fi shahaderech koyremes l'shloisha dvarim. The natural order of things is that traveling actually causes you to diminish in three areas of your life. Ma'etes priya v'rivya, it causes you to have less children, you're constantly on the move. Ma'etes es ha'mamoin, you decrease in wealth. Ma'etes es ha'shem, and it reduces your name, you know, as your the amount of people that know you, because if you keep constantly moving, no one knows you in a new place. That's why the Torah says these three things. That Hashem promised him that even though you're going to travel, you'll have children, you'll become wealthy, and everyone will know about you. Rashi translates that is talking about with money. What does it mean you will be a blessing? So Rashi says, you now have the power of blessing. Till now it was in my hand. Birachti la'adam and noyach. I blessed Adam and Noach. U'me'achshav, and from now on, at tatavarich es asher tachbait, you can bless whoever you want. Okay, so that's one understanding that Rashi has in these psukim, that it is a blessing to Avram Avinu to merit to children, to money, and to a good name. Then Rashi says, dovar acher, alternatively, es chalagoy gadol, I'll make you into a great nation. Zesha oimrim leke Avram. That's what we say, the God of Avram. In other words, his children will say in their davening, the God of Avram. Va'avorechcha, I will bless you. Zesha oimrim leke Yitzchak. That means we'll say leke Yitzchak. Va'gad lo shemecha, I'll make your name great. Zesha oimrim leke Yaakov. So all these three things represent the fact that when the Jewish people will daven, they'll mention the Avos. Yochol yechoyis min mekulam. You would think that we should end off the bracha mentioning all three avos as well. Talmud Loimer, that's the ending. Ve'ye bracha, you shall be for a blessing. Becha choismim b'loy bohem. They will end off with you and not with them. That's why we end off the first bracha Shmon Esrei. We don't say Magin Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. We say Magin Avram, just Avram Avin. That's a second pshat in Rashi. So we have to understand a couple of things here. We know that Avram Avinu went through 10 tests. This is the first one. Right? Hashem told him to leave his house, to go to a place where he didn't even know where he was going, right? It's a big test, seemingly. But the problem is two things. First of all, Hashem himself comes to tell him to do it. Right? If Hashem would appear to me and tell me to go somewhere, I would also go. Right? Is that such a big deal? Right? If Hashem himself comes to you and tells you to do something, of course you're going to do it. You have revelation of God himself. Number two, Hashem promises great reward. It's worth it for him. Right? He goes, we'll have children, money, a good name, be famous. Right? What exactly is the test here? Right? What's so hard? So he leaves his family, okay, but he's gaining so much. Also, on Rashi, we have to understand, Rashi doesn't bring all Pirushim on a Pasuk. You know, if Rashi would bring every single explanation there is on a Pasuk, Rashi would be very long, right? So first, Rashi seems to explain the pasuk in a very literal way, that all of these things refer to different blessings, money, good name, etc. But then Rashi takes another approach, dover acher, alternatively. He says, no, the pshat is, like Avram, like Yitzchak, like Yaakov. How does that pshat fit in with the literal meaning over here? How does Shmon Esrei come in here, right? And why does Rashi feel a need to bring it? So the Mefarshim explain that the test over here was not actually for Avram Avinu to go. That's not a test. Again, Hashem himself appeared, he promised him great reward. The test was, why are you going to go? In fact, Hashem made it harder for him. If Hashem would have just told him, go, right, leave your parents' house and go without promising him any reward, that would have been a little bit of a test, right? Now that Hashem is promising such reward, the test is, will you go for the reward or will you go because I told you so? And that's much more difficult, right? For example, right, there are different types of mitzvahs that we do. Some types of mitzvahs, the only reason why we do them is because Hashem says so, right? There's no tremendous enjoyment in putting on tefillin. There's no physical, bodily enjoyment for it. We do it because Hashem says so, right? It's a spiritual experience, not a physical enjoyment. But how about when Hashem says to enjoy Shabbos? Right? That's a pretty good mitzvah, right? You challenge, it's enjoyable, right? It's not necessarily... It's not something that you're doing because you have to. It's doing because you enjoy doing it. But the truth is, the real test is in those mitzvahs. Why are you doing it? Are you doing it because you enjoy it, or are you doing it because Hashem says to honor Shabbos? In other words, the mitzvahs which we personally, physically gain from, it's actually harder to serve Hashem with them because it's a much bigger test. You have to do them for the right reasons. Right? There's a famous story they say about the Baal Shem Tov. He was once walking with his students on Friday night, or Shabbos day, whatever it was, and he pointed them. There's a lot of stories like this that the Baal Shem Tov sort of gave his students like visions. They were able to see things like on a deeper level. So they saw inside the house a certain individual. He was wearing a shtreimel, like a sort of what certain Hasidim wear on Shabbos, and he was eating cholent. And he gave them a vision that it looked like it was an ox wearing a shtreimel eating a cholent on Shabbos. What was he trying to tell them? In other words, yeah, it was Shabbos. He was eating cholent, but it was basically an animal eating cholent. It wasn't done for the right reasons. It was done just for physical indulgence, right? So to over here, Avraham Avinu, Hashem's promising him all these tremendous rewards. But Hashem wants to see, why are you going to go? Are you going to go because I said so, or are you going to go because it's good for you? And that's the pshat in the pasuk. Look in pasuk Dalid. It says, "Vayelech Avram." Avram went. Kasher diber elov Hashem. Right in the first source, in verse number 4, it says, "Avram went forth as Hashem had commanded him." Why is that phrase there? Avram went. We know Hashem commanded him to the pasuk before, right? Three pasukim before, Hashem told him, "Lech lecha." So why does it say Avram went as Hashem commanded him? The deeper pshat is Avram went because Hashem commanded him, not because of the blessings, not because of the tremendous reward. And that's the pshat that Avram Avinu passed the test. Avram Avinu went on this journey only because Hashem told him so, not because there was personal benefit from it. And that's the pshat in Rashi. Rashi is giving us two pirushim here. And the truth is, the deeper pshat here is, that Rashi is saying there were two ways for Avraham Avinu to understand Hashem's command, to understand Hashem's word, and both were revealed to him. The Satan wanted him to understand it the first way. He wanted him to understand that Hashem is promising him all these tremendous brachas, all these good things, tremendous rewards, and it's going to be good for you, and that's why you should go. Says Rashi, Dovar Acher, another pshat. In other words, Avraham Avinu did not learn pshat like that. He didn't learn pshat that Hashem is going to give him all these rewards. No. In other words, he didn't go for the reward. He said, why am I doing this? So my children should be able to say, Lekei Avraham, Lekei Yitzchak, Lekei Yaakov. In other words, to bring the awareness of Hashem into the world. It's for Hashem, it's not for me. Right? It's not. There's a story that when I learned this part, I reminded myself of the story. It's more of a Yom Kippur story. I remember my father said this story like many, many years ago before Ne'ilah and his drasha. I'm not even sure if you were there, Lisa. It could be it was before. It was in Bellevue. Did you used to come in Bellevue? No. Yeah. So I was a little child when he said it, but it was such a powerful story that I remember it. And he said there's a story that there was a time in times of the Tzemach Tzedek, there was a terrible decree that the Tsar decreed at the time that they would snatch like 5-year-old children away from their parents and bring them to the army and train them for like 20 years in the army. And the point of it was they should forget their origins, they should forget their Yiddishkeit. And it was a terrible, terrible thing. And they used to call them the Cantonists or the Cantonistim. And the Tzemach Tzedek fought for them a lot. He tried to help them as much as possible, and he was really involved in this. So there's a story that there was a chassid of the Tzemach Tzedek. The Tzemach Tzedek sent him, I can't remember all the details exactly, but he sent him somewhere before Yom Kippur, and this chassid got stuck somewhere. He didn't make it back before Yom Kippur. And he got stuck in a town of grown-up Cantonists. Because what happened was, these children, they were extremely traumatized. They didn't have a normal childhood. They didn't build family. They sort of stuck together. They clung together in their own communities. And they were a very traumatized people. And he got stuck in one of these communities of these ex-Cantonists, these grown-up children who barely had any education at all. And many of them stayed religious, but they didn't know anything. But they stayed very strong. And he comes there, and they're very happy to see him. They say, listen, we don't really know how to read too well, and we're looking for a chazan for Yom Kippur. So can you be our chazan? He says, sure. But they said, on one condition, that Ne'ilah, we do. Ne'ilah, we have one of our guys, he leads Ne'ilah, and you're not allowed to say anything. You can't interrupt. Even if things look startling, strange to you, don't get involved. Fine. So he davens the whole Yom Kippur, comes to the Ilah, he sits down, and one of them goes up, and the story goes, this guy started taking off his shirt, and he started like, "What are you doing? It's a shul, it's Yom Kippur." But he remembered his deal. He's not saying anything. And on this person's body, there were scars from the whips that they used to whip him as a child. They used to torture them to try to get them to stop doing mitzvahs. And then this person, this chazan, turns to Hashem and he says to him, just one second, sorry. He turns to Hashem, he says to Hashem like this, it's the Ilah, it's Yom Kippur, and most people daven for their families. I don't really have a family to daven for. Basically, he goes through different things that people daven for and basically doesn't have any of them. He says, why are we coming here? We're coming for one reason. Because Yiskadal v'Yiskadash Shmei Rabba. And he starts the Kaddish V'Ilah. In other words, I'm here just to make your name great. I'm here for you, Hashem. I'm not here for me. I'm not here for any personal benefit. And that's the deeper pshat here. Avraham Avinu, he didn't go for himself. He didn't go because he wanted to become a great leader, father, and become a very well-renowned, wealthy person. He went for Yiskadal v'Yiskadash Shmei Rabba. He went to publicize the name of Hashem in the world. That's the Dover Acher of Rashi. That's the deeper pshat here, that Avraham Avinu went to spread the awareness of that they should be called the Lekei Avraham, Lekei Yitzchak, the Lekei Yaakov. Okay. Another thing we see over here, in Rashi, Rashi says that Hashem tells him to go because you can't have children here, right? Over here, you can't have children. Over there, you can. Seemingly, the pshat in Rashi is we have a concept called Mishana Mokim, Mishana Mazel. When you change places, your luck sort of changes, so to speak. The question is, is Hashem limited to that? Hashem couldn't make him have children in Haran? Like, what does it mean that you can't have children here, but you can have children there? Also, later on, Avraham Avinu changes his name. Hashem told him to change his name. Right? Similar idea. It says you won't be called Avram, you'll be called Avraham. Why? Because there was sort of like this decree that Avram could not have children. Therefore, it became Avraham. Avraham could have children. But again, it's a very strange thing. Why? Like, Hashem can't make Avram have children. Hashem is bound by this decree. Like, what's going on up here? So it explains like this, that there's two types of ways that Hashem runs the world. Hashem can run the world according to nature, and he can run the world beyond nature. Nature doesn't only mean the physical nature, it can mean spiritual nature. In other words, there's a spiritual system which Hashem runs the world, and a physical system. And Hashem could run the world that way. And Hashem can run the world higher than nature. It's not bound by nature. Now, it's interesting that how Hashem behaves with us is a little bit dependent how we behave. This is something which the Chovas HaLevavos talks about in Shara Bitochen, that when a person starts trusting in something else other than Hashem, Hashem says, no problem, I'll let you be run by something else. And then you're sort of, so to speak, obviously everything's Hashem, and there's such thing as Hashem leaving, but Hashem sort of lets nature, the system of nature, govern you, right? If a person gives themselves over to Hashem and he has bitachon in Hashem, and he totally goes out of himself, then Hashem operates with him as well that way. There's a famous vart about Purim that the Gemara says that why did the Jewish people deserve to be killed? Like, why was there this decree? Nothing happens, just stam. There's a reason for it. It says because they enjoyed the meal of Achashverosh. So the question is, like, is that punishable by death? Is that so bad to go to a meal? I mean, especially according to many opinions, it was kosher, right? So the answer that's given is that the Jewish people's survival is not natural. We actually, according to the system of nature, we shouldn't be here, which is just a fact, right? We're constantly attacked, we're hated. The expression is we're like one lamb surrounded by 70 wolves. We actually shouldn't be here. The only way we can be here is if we are governed by a supernatural system. So Hashem says, if you want to go and trust in Achashverosh, you want to give yourself over to him, fine, no problem. Right? And then you're going to be killed. Right? That's it wasn't a punishment. It was just a natural consequence. If you're governed by the laws of nature, you won't be here. You have to give yourselves over to Hashem, who's supernatural, in order to survive. Right? So that's the pshat of it. The Gemara says, what's the difference between Avram and Avraham? Avram has the gematria of Resh Mem Gimel, 243. Avraham is, you add 5, is 248. What's the significance of 248? 248 is the amount of limbs in a person, right? Ramach Ivarim. So the Gemara says that first he only made Hashem king over 243 limbs. He changed his name to Avraham. He made Hashem king over his entire self. I don't know exactly the significance of the number, but the idea is basically changing a name wasn't just changing a name. The idea was that he gave himself fully over to Hashem. That was the idea. He gave himself fully over to Hashem, and that's why he was able to have a child. Because naturally, he wasn't able to have a child. In fact, it was actually impossible. Avraham and Sarah were unable to have children, or the Sarah was impossible for her to have children. And Hashem says, when if you give yourself over totally to me, 100%, Avraham, your 248 limbs entirely over to me, you don't leave anything governed by nature or anything for yourself, then you can have a child. And that's the deeper pshat over here as well. Lech lecha me'artzecha me'latcha me'savicha means go out of your nature. Like we'll discuss in a moment more at length. The whole idea is not just to go out of the geographical location. It means go out of yourself. Give yourself, go to the land which I will show you. Follow me. And that's what Rashi means. Over here, you're not going to have children. Because over here, you're you. You're governed by nature. You want to be governed not by nature, you want to be governed by Hashem himself, that you have to give yourself over to Hashem. That's the lech lecha. That's the idea of totally, totally giving yourself over. Yeah, we're good? Okay. Just another little vart here. It says in the pasuk, the famous pasuk, which says, Va'avorcha mevorachecha, I will bless those that bless you, u'mekalelcha o'or, and I will, those who curse you, I will curse. So the Kli Yochar points out that when it comes to the blessing and the curses, it's in the opposite order. When it comes to the blessing, it says, Va'avor, I will bless those who bless you. When it comes to the curse, it says, those who curse you, I will curse. It doesn't say, I will curse those who curse you. Right? Why? Why does it switch around the order? So he says that we have a rule that when a person has a good thought, even if it doesn't actualize, Hashem considers it as if you've done it. But that only works in the positive. It doesn't work in the negative. Just because someone wants, because Hashem knows that we're human beings, and we all want to do not good things. That just makes us human. What it means to serve Hashem is that we don't actually do it, right? In other words, we do have control over what we do. We don't have so much control of what we want to do. We have control of what we do. So when it comes to good things, as soon as we desire to do a good thing, Hashem already rewards you. When it comes to bad things, only when you actually do the bad thing, then Hashem punishes you. Just because you want to or you intended to do the bad thing, that doesn't mean anything. So that's the pshat. It's like this. Va'avarcha, I will bless those who bless you. The I will bless comes before those who bless you, meaning I'm going to bless them as soon as they intend to bless you, before they even actually do it. So va'avarcha, I will bless those who bless you. The I will bless comes before they actually bless you. But when it comes to cursing, it doesn't say, I will curse those who curse you. He says, those who curse you, I will curse. Meaning, if they actually curse you, not just they want to or they intend to, if they actually do it, then I will punish them. So it's not just a lesson for people who hate Jews. It's a lesson for any good and evil. When it comes to good, Hashem sees your intentions and recognizes that. When it comes to bad, what's relevant is that you actually did bad, not that you intended to do it. That's a vart from the Kli Yochar. Okay, just one more short idea, and we're going to something a little bit longer from the Sfas Emes. Sfas Emes says this is seemingly a contradiction in the pasuk. It says, "I will bless those who bless you, and those who curse you, I will curse." Then it says, "All the families of the land will bless themselves with you." So, hold on a second. If all the families of the land will bless themselves with you, so who's going to curse you? Right? In the beginning of the pasuk, it seems like it would be those who will curse you. But then it says, no, everyone will bless themselves with Avraham. Everyone will want to be like Avraham. So, that's why they're cursing you. So, the Sfasema says an interesting thing. He says that people who, you know, Avraham Avinu is going to go out, is going to spread Yiddishkeit, spread the awareness of one God. People will oppose you. Right, not only Avraham Avinu, us also. We go out into the world, we act Jewish, we act like we're supposed to act. People will oppose you, right? But Hashem says, don't be frightened and don't stop your mission. Because even those who openly curse you, really they're jealous of you. Right? Really they want to be like you. When they see your life and they see the type of life you live, a life of integrity, of serving Hashem, of meaning, of purpose, even if they openly oppose you and they curse you, but really they actually want to be like you because they see the meaning of it. And that's the pshat. V'nivruchu b'cha kol mishpacha yisadam. Everyone will bless themselves with you. Even those who seem to not like you, really, really they do. Okay. Just a general idea on the parasha of Lech Lecha. Yeah, sure. Correct.
So this was the reward to be able to have children.
With Sarah. Yeah, those were his real children. In other words, Avraham Avinu's descendants...
It was not physically impossible for him.
No, it wasn't. No. But the miracle was for Sarah to have children. But I guess it will depend...
He
had to be worthy of that. Yeah. I guess she was already worthy. Right. Yeah. It's a couple. Meaning they have to be worthy of it together. Even if only one of them has the problem. He had children with Hagar. Yes, he was able to have children. Okay, so Parashas Lech Lecha is an interesting thing, right? We mentioned before that Avraham Avinu was 75 years old when the story happened, right? Last week's Parsha, we have about like 7 psukim discussing Avraham Avinu. So we have like couple of psukim talking about 75 years of Avraham Avinu's life without any detail at all, other than his wife's name was Sarai and they didn't have children. That's all we know from the written Torah. Yeah, there are midrashim, the whole story, even of him knocking, of him breaking the idols of his father and jumping into the fiery furnace and all of that. But that's not in the Torah. I mean, it's true. It all happened, but it's not in Torah Shabiksav, right? It's not in the written Torah. The Torah doesn't seem it necessary. Doesn't deem it necessary to tell us anything about Avraham Avinu's life before he was 75 years old, which is extremely strange. Avraham Avinu led a very, very accomplished life before 75. In fact, even in this week's parasha, we see something. He says that when he left Haran, he took a nefesh ashru osu b'Haran, all the people that he had converted. He was a very successful rabbi already, before Parshas Lech Lecha. And he had a massive congregation. He was taking people with him. So how come we don't know about that? We don't know about it now, but how come before the Torah doesn't deem it necessary to tell us anything? It's very strange. So obviously, the Torah is not a storybook. The Torah is not here to tell us stories. You see that, I mean, in Parshas Bereishis and Noach, you have around 2,000 years of history in two Parshas, right? And then for the rest of Bereishis, it's all just like 300 years, right? So the reason is because it's not relevant. We're told what's relevant. What do you mean relevant? What's relevant to be a Yid? What's relevant to be a Jew? Especially when it comes to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is the first Jew. And therefore, everything that happens to him is a lesson for us. Chazal say, Maisa Avos Simon Labanim. Everything that happens to the matriarchs, the patriarchs, are all a lesson for us how to live our life. So obviously, it's not as relevant what happened before 75 years old to us. And what it means to be a Yid, right? So, the question is why? Why? What changes? What's the shift by Parashas Lech Lecha? So, in order to understand this, let's understand another thing. Parashas Lech Lecha is always read in the week of Zayin Cheshvan, the seventh day of the month of Cheshvan. What is the significance of Zayin Cheshvan? So, in Israel, they start asking for rain on Zayin Cheshvan. Not mentioning rain, we start on Shmini Atzeres, right? Mashav Ruach Mar Lagash. Asking for rain is the same Talumotar Livracha. In Israel, they start asking for rain on the 7th of Cheshvan. Outside of Israel, it's the 4th or 5th of December. But in Israel, it's the 7th of Cheshvan. Why? Why the 7th of Cheshvan? The truth is that the season of rain actually begins from Shmini Atzeres. The Gemara tells us, really, we should start asking for rain. Really, we should start asking for rain Sukkot time already, actually. The reason why we don't is because rain on Sukkot is not a good thing, right? It's a curse. So we wait. So why don't we start right after Sukkot? The answer is because it would take a while for the last Jew to go over the border of Israel after having traveled
Serbs.
Yeah. After having traveled the distance, going home from the Beis HaMikdash, right? After being there for Sukkos. So they waited until the last person had crossed the border. Now he can ask for rain. Okay. In other words, we want to be nice to people who are traveling. But obviously, it's not just about people. The idea there is that the Yom Tov of Sukkos, the Tishrei experience, sort of carries through all the way to the 7th of Cheshvan. Okay, there's different stages of this. We say the Shabbos Bereishis, and this Parshas Noach, and then the 7th of Cheshvan is like the end of the whole journey. In fact, even al pi halacha, even halachically speaking, if someone writes in a document, after the Chag, let's say someone says, I'll pay you back money after Yom Tov. They make a document, like I'm borrowing money from you, I'm going to pay you back after Yom Tov. And they don't actually say a date. The halacha, according to some opinions, is they can pay back after the 7th of Cheshvan. Because it's still considered Sukkos. It's like it's still the, not literally, but the after effects of Sukkos are still there all the way until the 7th of Cheshvan. So it comes out that what the 7th of Cheshvan represents is leaving Israel and going back home. Leaving the Yom Tov and going back into the regular week, right? Which seems to be the exact opposite of Parshas Lech Lecha. Parshas Lech Lecha is Avraham Avinu leaving Chutz La'aretz and going back to Eretz Yisrael, right? So what's the connection between Parshas Lech Lecha and the 7th of Cheshvan? They seem to be the exact opposite message. One is about leaving Israel, one's about coming to Israel. So which one is it? So the Rebbe wants to explain like this, that the difference between Tishrei and the rest, see, what's higher? We discussed this last week. Is Tishrei higher or the rest of the year higher? You can ask a similar question. Is Shabbos higher or the weekday higher? So the answer is it depends what you're talking about. If you're talking about levels of holiness, of course Tishrei is higher. The revelation of godliness that takes place during the month of Tishrei, the closeness that we have to Hashem, is infinitely higher than we have during Cheshvan. Right here, there's no Yom Tov, there's no closeness, this is very distant, it's weekday. But if you're talking about what is the ultimate purpose, when are you really fulfilling what Hashem wants you to do, it's in the month of Cheshvan, not in the month of Tishrei. Because Tishrei, at the end of the day, is an experience of holiness, you're in a spiritual cocoon. Cheshvan is when you go out into the world and you make what's called the Dira B'Tachtonim, you bring Hashem into the world, right? So he gives a very interesting halachic example for this idea, to bring out how on the one hand, we're further from Hashem in Cheshvan, but on the other hand, really, ultimately, we're closer. Why? He says like this, there's two types of people. There's what he calls a sochir and a shliach. A sochir means an employee. A shliach means a messenger, an agent, someone that I appoint to do something on my behalf, right? What's the idea? A sochir means let's say I employ someone to work my field. So he says, generally speaking, an employee is close to the employer, or at least close to the objects or property of the employer. So on the one hand, the employee is closer to the employer than a shliach is to the mishaleach. Why? What's the idea of a shliach? A shliach, generally speaking, I'm talking about now the halachic terminology of a shliach. I don't mean like a shliach sent to Thailand. I mean a shliach, which is a similar idea actually spiritually, but the halachic concept. The halachic concept of a shliach, for example, is if a man wants to marry a woman and they're in two different countries. So technically what a man can do is send a shliach with the ring, and the shliach can betroth the woman on behalf of the husband who's in a different country. The term shliach actually means to send away, right? So the whole idea is that I'm sending someone far from me to do something for me. So on the surface, a shliach is more distant from the mishaleach than a sochir, than an employee is from the employer. Because an employee is doing things with the property of the employer, is near the employer. A shliach is sent somewhere to a different country, or distant at least, right? On the other hand, there's a closeness that the shliach has that the sochir doesn't have. And that is, there's a rule that we have, shluchai shal adam kamaisai. A person's shliach is like them. It's like an extension of them. Now what that means is a whole lengthy discussion, but take the example of marriage, for example. The shliach is not marrying the woman. It's the mishaleach that is. But nevertheless, when the shliach gives the ring to the woman, it's as if it's the hand of the mishaleach giving the ring to the woman. He's like an extension of the sender. It's like the sender in a different body. That's why a shliach in many mitzvahs can do the mitzvah on behalf of the mishaleach. And not in all mitzvahs, but in many mitzvahs. Why? Because the shliach is the mishaleach. He's an extension of the sender. By an employee, we don't say that. We don't have that rule that an employee is an extension of the employer. Why? What's the crux of the issue here? Why is it that on the one hand, the employee is closer? So seemingly you would say, no, he should be the extension. But we say, no, the shliach who is far, the shliach is the extension of the mishaleach. Why? Because there's a fundamental difference between them. The employee is doing something for himself. He's getting paid, right? Yes, it's true, he's doing something for the employer, but his intention is not the employer, his intention is him. Because he's doing it to get paid. If he wouldn't get paid, he wouldn't do it, right? The shliach is doing something for the sake of the mishaleach. He gets no benefit out of it. The shliach betroths the woman. He's not married to the woman. It's the mishaleach who's married to the woman. Right? So it's not for him. It's for the mishaleach. That's why the employee is focused on himself. And therefore, he's himself. He's not the employer. He's his own entity. The shliach is focused on the mishaleach. And therefore, the shliach is the mishaleach. It's not about him. It's not about me. It's not about what I want. The shliach can't stop making up his own things. He has to do exactly what mishaleach tells him to do. And that's why there's this unbelievable bond between the shliach and the mishaleach, because the shliach is not focused on his own ego. He's not self-centered. He's out of himself, and he's focused on what mishaleach wants. As he explains, that's the difference between when the Yidden were in the Beis HaMikdash and when they came home. Right, when they were the oil of the regal, when they went away from the Beis HaMikdash. When you're in the Beis HaMikdash, you're very close to Hashem. But you're like an employee. Why? Because there's benefit for you. You are enjoying it. Not only enjoying it like you're having a steak. I mean, you're enjoying it spiritually. You're having spiritual benefit. You're inspired. It's beautiful. You're in the Beis HaMikdash. What could be better? When you go home, when Hashem's, you just go home. Hashem sends you home. Hashem sends you home on a mission to bring the inspiration from the Beis HaMikdash back to where you came from. That's not for my benefit. That I have no interest in doing, because actually that's not that just makes me suffer spiritually. That's not good for me. But it's for Hashem. It's what Hashem wants. And then I switch from being a sochir, from being an employee, to being a shliach. And that's why the ultimate, and so similarly, in Tishrei, we're like an employee. We're loving it. We're basking in the holiness of Hashem. It's Yom Tov. It's beautiful. We're all gaining. When we go out into the world, it's not for me. That's not enjoyable spiritually. That makes me feel very distant, actually. But now I become a shliach. Now I'm doing what Hashem wants from me, not what I want. Even if what I want is good. This is what's important to understand. We're not saying that a person wants to do something bad. We're saying that a person wants to stay in the Beis HaMikdash. Right? He wants to stay inspired in Tishrei. Hashem says, no, that's not what I want from you, though. I want from you to go out into the world and make me a dwelling place in the world, even though that might make me feel more distant, might be less inspiring, but that's what I want from you. Right? I mean, we have this in every relationship that a person has in life. You have things that make you feel close to the other person, and you have things that the person actually wants you to do. Right? It doesn't, many times, and they're both important, obviously. You need both. That's why you need Tishrei. You need the Beis HaMikdash also. But the many times in a relationship, what makes you feel close to the person is actually not what they want from you, right? What they want from you is something else, which is not necessarily enjoyable and inspiring and makes you feel close. But that's the real kesher. That's the real relationship, because you're doing it for them. You're not doing it for you, right? So too over here, and that's the same idea as Lech Lecha. This is what we've been discussing the whole time. See, the difference between before Lech Lecha and after Lech Lecha. Before Lech Lecha, Avraham Avinu was a great tzaddik. But it was all because he came to the realization that there's a God. Like the Rambam describes, he looked at the sun, the moon, the stars. He was convinced that this is the right way of living. It was all about his ideals, what he understood, and what he wanted. Now, it so happened to be that what he wanted was a tremendously good thing. He wanted to spread the name of Hashem in the world. So much, he wanted it so much, he was ready to die for it. That's how much he wanted it. That's how much he was connected to this. But at the end of the day, it was him. It was his recognition of godliness. It was his recognition of Hashem. And that's not what it means to be a Yid. And that's why we know very little about it, because it's not relevant. What it means to be a Yid is to do what Hashem commands you to do. Not what you understand what Hashem wants you to do, or what you understand about Hashem. What it really means to be a Yid is to do what Hashem wants. And this is the first time that Hashem comes to Avraham Avinu and tells him to do something. It says, and what does he tell him to do? It's not only that he tells him to do something, it's what he tells him is the same message. He tells him, Lech lecha me'artzecha, go out from your land. And the word artzecha also means ratzon, from your desires, your habits, your atmosphere. Even though all these things were all good. What did Avraham Avinu desire? He didn't desire to do bad. He desired to serve Hashem, and Hashem says, go out of that also. Don't serve me because you want to serve me. Serve me because that's what I want. That's what Hashem wants. Then you can go totally out of yourself. And that's the same exact message of Zayin Cheshvan. The idea of leaving Eretz Yisrael, going out of the Beis HaMikdash, even though I want to stay in the Beis HaMikdash. Is he staying in the Beis HaMikdash? It's like Avraham Avinu before Lech Lecha. It's enjoyable for me. It's what I understand that's good. It's when I feel close to Hashem. Lech Lecha is Zayin Cheshvan. Lech Lecha is go out of yourself, go out of what, don't worry about what you want and what you think is good, do what Hashem wants. And that's the message of the parsha, and that's the message of Zayin Cheshvan. And that's why, that's when the Torah picks up the story. That's what's relevant. That's what it means to be a Yid.
Because before that, he was the father of monotheism, not the father of Judaism.
Correct. Exactly. He was, was spreading the awareness of one God, but that's because he had that awareness. Now he becomes a Yid. And this week's parsha becomes a Jew.
And that's why it's now.
Becomes a Jew.
Torah, because
correct.
It's talking to us about how to be a Yid.
Correct. Now it's Yiddishkeit. Now it's not just a spiritual aspiration. Now it's what it means to be a Jew. What it means to be a Jew is to be connected to Hashem and do what Hashem wants, not what I want. And that's it's a very powerful idea, right? It's relevant to all of our lives. You know, we live in not in the most spiritual city, right? Many parts of our life is not the most spiritual experience. But nevertheless, we always have to remember that wherever we are, that is what Hashem wants us to be. Hashem is telling us, Lech Lecha. It's a mission that Hashem gave me. The fact that I'm here, the Pasuk says, Hashem mitzadigever kinonu. You're never somewhere where Hashem doesn't want you to be. If you're born here, or you live here, and you are here, that means that Hashem sent you here. And it's not so enjoyable, and there's many other places which may be better, and a much more better experience, spiritually speaking. Who cares? It's better for you maybe, but that's not what Hashem wants. Right? Hashem wants, I'm not diminishing the hardship of it, it's hard. But we have to always remember that it's not about me. It's not about the way I feel. Like, yeah, of course, if I live in Yerushalayim or, I don't know, Borough Park, of course I'll feel close to Hashem there, right? But that's not what Hashem wants. Obviously not, because I'm here. Right? So Hashem wants us to be here, and Hashem wants us to spread godliness here and to spread holiness here. And if we do that, then we're shluchim. We're shluchim of Hashem. We're shluchay shel adam kamoisai. We become representatives of Hashem in this world. We become one with Hashem. We're an extension of Hashem in this world, because it's not about me, it's not about what I want, but it's about what Hashem wants. Okay. Pleasure.